Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Bill de Blasio versus Eva Moskowitz. We will try to explain why the mayor and the high-profile charter school director seem to be so at odds, even though the mayor just approved 5 of her 8 applications for next year and dozens of new charters overall. Also, Melanie Notkin, author of Otherhood, about women who have what she calls circumstantial infertility. That is by relationship status more than biology, say. Plus, how some airlines are making flying even more annoying than it already is, with United's crackdown on carry-on luggage and Delta's change in frequent flyer programs to reward dollars instead of miles. And another edition of the Brian Lehrer Show, Explanatarium, today. What are you really expert in that most people are not that you would like to explain on the air? But first, a new NBC Marist poll has Mayor de Blasio's favorability rating at 59% after his first 2 months in office, but his job approval rating at just 39%. Meanwhile, City Council is proposing some changes to democracy in New York that my first guest today very much approves of. He is Dick Dady, Executive Director of the Good Government Group, Citizens Union. Hi, Dick. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be back.
And before we get into the interesting city council news, I know you're not a pollster, but do you get the difference between a favorability rating and an approval rating? Because it looks like Mayor de Blasio is starting out his term with a big split between them.
You know, that is a bit of an odd disparity that I'm not sure is fully explained or understandable. But my initial sense of is that, you know, people really like this mayor. They like the way he talks with them. They like the way he's taking, they like his approach to the job. They like his engagement. I think they're not necessarily approving of the way in which he's handling the issues. So I see the favorability as, you know, we like this guy, and the other rating saying that we don't like the job that he's doing as well as we like him.
And demographically, it's kind of interesting. He gets his highest approval ratings for the job that he's doing among African-Americans, among whom 50% approve, according to Marist, 45% of Latino voters, 30% of white voters. And by borough, he's just about tied with his home borough of Brooklyn and the Bronx, both giving him about a 44% approval rating, 36% of voters in Queens, and 30%, or I guess 30% in Manhattan. So interesting,
right,
that he's got the lowest approval ratings in Manhattan.
Yes, I think, you know, what we're seeing here is that many New Yorkers are tuning in to his policies, and I think the voters that supported him in September, November, knew what he was going to do as mayor because he was very clear. I mean, we have to compliment the mayor because he has stayed true to his campaign promises and really focused on what he said he would accomplish. And that's a commendable thing for an elected official to do. But I think, you know, as more New Yorkers tune in and say, wait a minute, he's really doing this, and they see what those positions mean on the issues that they care about, I think they're a little bit surprised now that they've focused in on what he's actually doing.
And then they either like it or they don't like it. All right, interesting numbers in an early poll on how the mayor is doing from the Marist people with the Wall Street Journal and NBC News. And Dick Dady, you approve of several ideas from City Council. Let's begin with what it's doing that you have called remarkable. Apparently, the speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito, is getting ready to redistribute some power away from herself. Tell us about that.
Sure. And the city council, when it took its first session this year, continued the rules by which it ran the body for the past 4 years. But it also took the important step of empowering its rules committee to take a look at ways in which they can improve or change the way in which the city council actually functions. Is there a way that we can empower individual city council members and create a more census-style driven form of leadership in the city council that would be fairer? And so they held, the city council, the rules committee, held for the first time ever a public hearing on how the council should operate. Never before has the council come together and done that. If there have been changes, and there have been over the last 8 years under the previous speaker, Chris Quinn, to improve the functionality of that body, it's been, you know, in private rooms with the city council members making those decisions, and then they're announced. For the first time ever, the city council held a public hearing in which they invited the public to come in and say, tell us how we should do our business. And that was remarkable. And she and the other city council members should be commended for that.
By the way, I left out one phrase, which is very embarrassing, from my recap of the poll numbers when I was going by borough. I meant to say 36% of voters in Queens and Staten Island think de Blasio is doing a good or excellent job. I just said 36% of voters in Queens, and I left out and Staten Island, which is bad because people on Staten Island think that I don't care about you now or think that the Marist poll didn't actually include you, but it was actually tucked in there in the language with the Queens line. So he was doing the same in Queens and Staten Island, which is interesting because they're so demographically different from each other. Do you know of other instances of powerful politicians giving away some of their power as an act of good government? How unique or unusual is what Speaker Mark Viverito is proposing here?
It's extremely unusual, and we haven't really seen it here in New York in our own experience. As many of your listeners may know, New York City has a very strong mayoralty. And even though the city council exists as the legislative branch, it's not a co-equal branch of government, much like we see in our federal government with Congress being seen as a co-equal branch of compared to the president or the Supreme Court. So the fact that we're a weaker part of our governance structure is actually looking at sharing power within the council is remarkable, and that shows a very confident elected official. But I think it also reflects how the 51 members want to be governed and how they want to execute their role as the legislative body. And just because she herself may give up power as speaker and sharing it with her members does not necessarily mean that the council itself would be a weaker institution. In fact, we would argue that it might be a stronger institution if there's greater collaboration and greater investment by the individual members in how the council is governed.
By the way, listeners, I'm curious. Anybody out there happened to be polled by Marist and gave that divided answer? Or anybody, whether or not you were polled by Marist, feel like you would say, yes, you have a high favorability rating or feeling about Mayor de Blasio, but a low job approval rating? Can you divide those two for us, anybody? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you think you fall into that camp, apparently 20% of New Yorkers, if the poll sample is accurate, feel favorably toward Mayor de Blasio, but don't necessarily think he's doing a good job yet. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, if that sounds like you. Dick Dady, Executive Director of the Good Government Group Citizens Union, our guest here on WNYC. Another one, Dick, that City Council wants is to ask Albany for permission to change citywide elections in the city to eliminate the dreaded runoff elections through instant runoff voting. Now, I know this is one of your perennial issues. So for the uninitiated, what is instant runoff voting?
Sure. Instant runoff voting, otherwise known as IRV, and sometimes called ranked choice voting, is where the voters go into the voting booth, and instead of just voting for the one candidate they want to see win election, they rank the candidates according to their preference. So if there are maybe five candidates on the ballot, you go in and rank one, your first choice, your second choice, and your third choice. So in the event that the first choice voters, the first choice candidate doesn't get 40% of the vote in a citywide contest, the one who gets the least number of votes is eliminated, and his or her votes are then added to those above. And so, it's a process of elimination that allows you to select a candidate with the largest possible mandate.
The mayoral race just barely avoided a runoff when de Blasio squeaked past the 40% of the vote needed in the original primary. The public advocates race had a runoff for the benefit of very few voters who turned out in that, and it cost more than the funding for the public advocate's office itself. Is that the main reason you want this?
There are several reasons we want this. You're exactly right. The runoff election that was held 2 weeks after the September primary cost New Yorkers $13 million. And how many people turned out? We had very few. There was just 5% of the registered voters in the Democratic Party turned out for the runoff. 185,000 New Yorkers cast a ballot for one of the two candidates, Tish James or Dan Squadron, in that election. There were 3.2 million registered Democrats, and only 185,000 of them turned out to essentially choose the second most important citywide post in New York City. And so we think that, it's a cost savings, but it gives an opportunity for voters to only have one opportunity to express their choices without incurring the additional cost. And it's a better way of conducting our elections. And it also creates we'll not see as many negative campaigns because people are not just arguing to the voters to be the number one choice that they want, but also if you stand to be the second choice of some voters, you're not going to criticize those voters who are voting for someone else as their first choice.
Oh, or you're not going to criticize the candidate so harshly,
yes,
who you think you might be the second choice to, enhancing your chances of winning the race overall. Is that a good thing, though? I mean, I understand what you say about how it would decrease negative campaigning, but do we want our political candidates to be sucking up to one another at the same time that they're competing with each other?
I wouldn't say sucking up, but I think we want them to focus on policies and programs that they're proposing and less on trying to draw, clashes or have clashes with the other candidates or personality or politics. Because we do know that negative campaigning turns off New Yorkers. And, we saw it in the public advocates race. It wasn't about the issues so much as the personalities between those two. And we saw what went on. It was a bit of a catfight at the end. And New Yorkers have no taste for that.
Mayor de Blasio, by the way, has not endorsed the proposal for instant runoff voting, correct?
That is correct. But he also does not oppose it. And in the city council last year, we had near majority support for the instant runoff voting system. And here in New York, Brian, we can achieve this in one of two ways. The city council could pass a bill implementing instant runoff voting, but then it would have to go to the voters of New York in a ballot referendum, and it would have to be passed by them. Or, which is what's happening right now, is that the city council went up this week saying we'd like to see the state legislature enact instant runoff voting. If that were the case, and the governor signed it into law, it would not have to be approved by the voters because it's been approved by the state.
Do you think that's likely to happen, since one way or another this is in Albany's hands, even though it's the city council that's requesting it?
I think it is very possible. There seems to be growing support for it. There is momentum behind it. It's people are looking for ways in which to save money, but also make our election processes more simple and enfranchise voters at a greater level. To have only 5.7% of all New Yorkers vote for the public advocate in what was the most determinative election, the runoff election, is a shame. And so this would streamline our elections, give voters greater choice, and save us money.
So, listeners, do you have an opinion about instant runoff voting? Can you think of another example of the leader of a legislative body actually voluntarily giving up power, as apparently Melissa Mark Viverito plans to do, in distributing power in the council away from the speaker's chair and more toward other members to some degree? And why do you think Mayor Bloomberg, 12 years of habit, why do you think Mayor Bill de Blasio is breaking out of the box with a higher favorability rating than approval rating, 59% favorability, 39% job approval in this new Marist poll? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Donna in Queens, you think you might know why that's happening?
Yes, I just wanted to make a statement. I'm a New Yorker, born and raised, and I just feel like after you vote for someone, and then after your vote, you pull out down the ballot, they're doing something totally different. Jobs is important to me. And I think constituents need to have maybe training classes, or voters need to be have some more. I just think city council should be more engaging.
City council should be more engaging.
Yeah, and also the mayor and your the politicians. It's like after they get your vote, they're on some worrying about the carriages, the pre-K, and people in New York City need jobs.
Jobs. Donna,
thank you
very much. Jean-Marc from Brooklyn wants to talk about how they vote in Australia. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Brian. I just wanted to address something that that perhaps your guest and yourself haven't quite discussed, and perhaps it's just a clarification point. I'm wondering if the instant runoff voting system, which sounds very much like the preferential voting system that we have in Australia, I'm wondering if that, where that preference is distributed when the votes are counted, is the voter themselves the sole arbiter of where that preference goes? And by that I mean, on the ballot, do we simply vote one for our preferred candidate and we must put our second preference, third preference, fourth preference? Or can we vote, is the system where being proposed, the instant runoff voting, is it one where we vote one for our candidate and the candidate themselves decides where that preference is distributed? Because that obviously has ramifications on certain preference deals which are done before the election, which is a whole new level of politics in Australia.
The candidate decides? In other words, the candidate determines who would get his or her vote second as the second choice if they're not the winner?
That's interesting.
Correct.
So prior to the election, there are preference deals done between, say, extreme left green parties and center left parties, that the preferences will go to the center left mm-hmm. party. If the you know, the Green Party doesn't get
up. Right. Dick Dady, are you familiar with that system from Australia?
I'm aware of it, yes. You know, that would not be the case here in New York, where the candidates have a role in choosing how those votes get assigned. I mean, this is all voter-based. The voters come in, you know, a voter could come in and simply vote for only one candidate as their first and only candidate. There's no obligation for them to vote, you know, for their second or third choice candidates. And so if those voters do, it's a matter of the system in eliminating the one who had the least amount of votes until we get someone who gets to 40%. So the candidates have no role in determining the outcome other than how they campaign during it.
Let me ask the caller, Jean-Marc, if you're still there. Don't they also have mandatory voting in Australia? And how large is the turnout considering that?
They do have mandatory voting. And the turnout, I mean, it's something, I guess it's almost sacrilegious to suggest in my new country, but you actually get fined if you don't vote. So there's a small fine, which is the equivalent of a sort of misdemeanor or parking ticket. So there's a financial incentive for you to take part in the election process. So everyone of voting age must enroll to vote, and everyone of voting age participates in every election within the electorate that they're enrolled in.
So if the fine is small, what percentage turnout do they have in general in real life? Do you know?
It's quite large, but I'd be grasping at the figure, yeah. Brian. I don't want to misrepresent.
I've heard over 90%, Brian.
It is over 90%. So, Jean-Marc, thanks again. And Dick Dady, this is another huge problem in New York, as you know, and I don't know if instant runoff voting would contribute to the solution, but voter participation in New York City elections has been going down for decades. It's abysmally low, really. And in so many cases, the people who are most vulnerable to the actions of government are voting in the least numbers.
That is exactly correct. I mean, we had, for the general election, only 24% of all registered voters turn out and participate in the November general election for city offices. That was the lowest that we've seen in over 60 years. And it is abysmal. But that's why I think also the council as part of its legislative package that it took up to Albany this year, also endorsed the concept of early voting, because there are hurdles to voter participation that exist that we should try and remove. You know, having only one day for voters to turn out to vote may be a disincentive when people have to work and they have to take care of their kids and, you know, they're busy with their own lives. Expanding the number of days that New Yorkers get to vote could actually increase the number of people who are turning out to vote.
Jeff in Park Slope thinks he knows why the mayor might have high favorability ratings, but lower job approval ratings. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I think I have a good sense of what's going on here with the Blasio thing. You know, as you said earlier, New York voted for him, and he's a very likable guy, so I think that goes for his approval rating. I guess his likability ratings. But he's had a really rough go for the past 2 months in the press. I mean, it's really interesting. I read somewhere that in this survey that over 50% of the people thought he handled the weather well. But if you watch channels one,
that was in that poll today, by the way. That was in the Marist poll. Over 50% thought he handled the weather well, right?
Right. So, if you watch channels 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 11. You would think that it was Armageddon in New York City, and he was absolutely incompetent and sleeping on the job. So I think for a lot of voters, it's, hey, I like this guy. I voted for his policies. He seems like a likable guy. When he's on TV, he's very reassuring. But according to what the reporters who are paid to figure these things out are telling me, things are a mess. And I think that might explain a little bit. And he needs some more time under his belt to get some of these programs, the bigger programs. I mean, I voted for him on Vision. So I think a lot of things are going to make me happy about him. I won't even see until 2 years, 2 and 3.
Jeff, thank you very much. Mark in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Yeah, on the two questions you have, I think the reason the mayor's likability is above his job performance at this point is because I think most people like where he's going. He's appointed some great people, but they haven't really gotten to work yet. And I think we're waiting to see how it plays out. I frankly, very, very hopeful about the people, particularly Steve Banks, which I think is a remarkable appointment.
Former activist for poor people, people on welfare and other benefits, now appointed to actually run the Human Resources Administration.
He's been suing the city for 3 decades to take care of poor people, and now he's the one running the show.
Yep.
And how we take care of poor people is unbelievable. So I'm very impressed. In terms of instant runoff voting, I think it'd be terrific. It'd save a lot of money, but also, you know, if we use it in terms of if someone does not get 50% of the vote, then people can signal their second choice, and then the choice of the all the second choices would accrue. Then, if we did that in the presidential election, Al Gore would have been president because all of Ralph Nader's votes would have gone to him, and interestingly, George Bush the first would have been Bill Clinton because all of Perot's votes would have gone to him. But I think it'd be a great way to go.
Yeah, well, you're probably right about how those third-party candidates would have distributed in the presidential elections, although Perot's may have been a little more evenly divided, maybe a lot more evenly divided than Ralph Nader's. But Dick Dady, interesting stuff there. And I wonder, since we were talking about the abysmal turnout, if the favorability and job approval ratings for de Blasio in this citywide poll would be any different if they polled people who actually were in that 24% who turned out in November. My guess is maybe not that different.
It's a very interesting idea, Brian, to, you know, poll those who actually participated as opposed to poll all of New Yorkers, you know, 75% of whom did not show up to vote in the election. And I think that, you know, we got to get to those 75% and understand better why they're not participating. But I think that, you know, there are, you know, your earlier caller hit the nail right on the head, is that he, you know, people like this new mayor and they want him to succeed. They have great hopes for him. You know, he's had a rough couple months in office. I mean, who would have thought we would have had as many snowstorms? You know, he's remained focused on the agenda that he was elected to implement, and that's to be commended. But, you know, I think if you did poll the 24% that voted, you would find
I guess that would be higher, wouldn't it?
It's got to be much higher.
Yeah.
Because you're now bringing in all New Yorkers who didn't participate.
And there we go. Dick Dady, executive director of the Citizens Union. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.